listen to temptation, you can even go astray. But if you listen to temptation, it's gonna be the devil to pay. You can wink your eye at moral if you care to live that way. But if you wink your eye at moral, it's gonna be the devil to pay.
Hello, we are the Brothers Geek, and this is our podcast.
Woo!
Woohoo!
Oh my god.
So, are we actually recording right now? This is happening.
Wow, alright. Yeah. This is episode number... this is episode number 56. We're recording this on June 7th.
Wait!
56?
56.
56?
Yeah.
Was there a
50? Oh, there was a 55.
The last one on the website, dude.
The last one on the website is 54.
What happened to 55?
Well...
We can't talk about it.
It's our best episode ever.
That's why we shouldn't talk about it, because it's so good. Oh,
so I think if we release 55, we'll ruin the internet forever.
Well, it was. I'm biased, but not so biased. I have to say that was our best episode ever.
Best episode.
It was
ever
my finest hour by far.
Hilarious. We were all on our game.
We really were.
As the youngins say.
Yeah, you shouldn't use that. You're in your 40s.
I can't say on fleek.
No, you shouldn't.
I don't use that correctly?
You shouldn't ever.
I mean, you're using it correctly.
The title of that episode is We Are on Fleek.
No, it's not.
It's terrible.
I write the episode titles, and that was not the title of the episode.
So, Patrick?
Yeah?
This sounds like it's a mystery.
Oh.
Of the lost episode 55?
I think there
is
might
that what we're
be.
We're dealing with here? Episode 55 is gone forever? Or could it be recovered?
I think it's gone forever. I think it's lost in the ether. Yeah.
Huh.
It's really a disappointment because we were good.
Anyways.
It was the best episode we've ever done.
Anyways, it's 56 now, and we're
56?
Moving on.
You were on point. And Patrick, you were the best, most hostful hostess.
Hostful.
Wow.
That I've ever heard.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
There is, in fact, no interruption of your intro.
It never. You know what? And I could see, I'm going to say this about Patrick's hosting skills on 55.
Yeah.
Fuck Chris Hardwick.
Wow.
That's what I'm going to say.
Wow.
Andrew, your trivia question was the best I've ever heard.
Right?
Okay, all right. Don't give too much information about this secret lost episode. Let's move on.
We're moving on.
56.
This one's 56. We're moving on. We do not look back. We look forward.
We do not look back. We look forward.
How are you, boys?
Hey, so we're the Brothers Geek. We're geeks and we're brothers and we talk about geeky stuff. Chris and Andrew... are those two, and they went to what'd you guys do this past weekend? Tell us about it.
I hung out at my house. I watched my kid swim.
Yeah.
Played with my dog.
Was there anything geeky you did, or
what? I watched some geeky TV. I played some video games with my daughter, Minecraft.
Are you forgetting that Phoenix Comic Con happened, Christopher?
Oh, shit!
Yeah!
Yes, I did! I took my children to Phoenix Comic Con.
Yeah.
And I even saw you there.
You did see me there.
Brothers Geek had a presence.
We did. I handed out some Brothers Geek cards. Just for you out-of-towners, just to give a little information, this past weekend in Phoenix, the single hottest 4 days of the year so far.
Wow.
It peaked to 117.
The earliest it's ever been that hot.
It literally felt like an oven. When you open the oven to take cookies out of the oven, that's what the weather was like.
I saw this on the weather channel, 3% humidity.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
3% relative humidity. What's the humidity in Portland right now, Patrick?
I have no idea. It's probably higher than
108%.
That.
In Portland.
You guys are swimming, basically, everywhere.
It's 108% in Portland. If
it's like over 100, if it's 100%, is that just water? Is that what that is?
Yes.
I don't know the science of air saturation.
If it's over 100%, you're all fish.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm looking at the weather app, and it's not saying the humidity at all.
Scroll down a little bit.
You got to scroll down. Oh, okay. Humidity, 35.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's got to be low for Portland.
Yeah.
Minnesota, where we're from, where we have our roots.
Mm. Yeah.
Consistently in the spring and summer, over 50% humidity.
Whoa. Yeah, it's so hot up there.
Yeah, Phoenix.
It's so humid.
3%.
Again, 3%.
I'm and 120 degrees.
I'm looking
so
at
it. What did you say?
It was 120?
Like that's real.
It was 120. Anyways, can you guys talk about Comic-Con? Like, we keep talking about the weather.
It's a build-up, dude.
Build-up.
This is called... It's called setting the stage.
Oh,
we are setting the stage, and this
you
is the.
Did you learn anything in film school?
I'm thinking about
not learn anything about storytelling.
Yeah, but while you set the stage, you have to entertain the audience.
And, I am entertaining.
Okay.
Just I'm thinking
about all the. I'm thinking about all the cosplayers who are sweating at this.
Oh gosh!
Like all these.
We don't
costumes.
Have any official numbers yet, but there must have been. At least a few people who were felled with heat stroke due to their layers upon layers of cosplay. Because it was...
Excellent.
Yeah, it was... No, the cosplay was fantastic. That's one of the stories about this weekend. Kristen and I actually went to the Masquerade costume contest on Saturday night.
Nice.
And we live tweeted it on the Brothers Geek Twitter feed, so if you guys want to scroll back, you can...
Missed out. If you're not following Brothers Geek on Twitter, that was a great
live tweet
session.
Yeah, myself and Kristen, actually. Kristen,
quotes from
Kristen tweeted as well. It was
loyal listener.
It was great.
Kristen.
Yeah.
Child of the podcast.
The creativity associated with all of that is just incredible to me. I do not...
Love
and
it.
The... It's...
Dedication,
I mean, they get on stage.
Skill,
they get on stage for a minute at a time, and they have like a presentation of their costume.
What was the best one you saw?
The best one I saw that didn't win, and I felt that it was robbed. It was in the masterclass category.
Talk about the classes.
Okay, there were four distinct levels. There was the youth, which is obviously children. I think probably
how old did that go up to? Did you?
They didn't actually. This is one of my main complaints about the Masquerade contest as well. They didn't actually go over the rules in any depth. So I didn't, because so there was youth, there was novice, there was journeyman, and then there was masterclass. And they actually didn't give information as to what differentiates between youth,
really?
Novice, journeyman.
Maybe,
they didn't. Maybe it was in the written materials.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, the youth, you could tell they were mostly kids. I mean, all probably 12 and under. Novice and journeyman, though. I actually, there were some, the costume that won the novice category was the Invisible Man, and it looked like an invisible person in a suit.
What?
And obviously, it looked great.
How did they do that?
Yeah.
The guy had the invisible, he constructed like a framework with like shoulders and arms and legs. And the chest appeared to be hollow, and it had a hollow mask.
So his head was inside the chest.
His head was inside the chest, and essentially the entire costume was in like hanging off the front of him. So he would walk around, and he had his legs or whatever, and he had his arms. But essentially, the optical illusion was that the chest was hollow and empty. The bandage that wrapped the face was showing off a hollow, empty head. And when he took his hat off, you could see the top of the bandage was empty also.
Oh, whoa.
So did he actually do that? He unwound the bandage off
the head? Oh, no. He didn't do that. But you could see through enough of the costume itself to see that it was hollow.
Was it a 360 costume? Like when he turned around, it looked like the back of the Invisible Man?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was great. That guy won the novice category, and I thought that was easily the strongest – of besides the masterclass, that was the
strongest.
Was
this like a Westminster Dog Show where the winners of the three categories went against each other for best in show?
Yes, there was a best in show that was announced at the end.
All right.
Yeah, it was from
the winners of the
What did the people win for all these things? Is it money?
They won passes to next year's con, and there was varying levels of cash awards. Like the winner of the masterclass, I think, won like $500 cash.
Oh, wow.
And there was a special award. The award for best in show was actually like a scholarship, I think, or like a free class at a costume academy or some kind of costume company in Southern California. I forget the name of it now. I should have taken notes to report on it better. But
yeah, you should have.
It was a very, very impressive display, and I mean,
how
the
many
hall
people
was
were there?
Easily 1,000 people.
More than when San Diego, when we went to San Diego Masquerade?
Oh, no, the San Diego Masquerade must have been several thousand people.
Yeah, yeah.
In my opinion, okay. This was probably 1,000 people.
All right.
I think. 200
that's
people
still a good
in costume.
Amount.
Oh, jeez. No, it's the most that's highly cool. attended thing of the weekend, is what I was told. So it was very, very impressive. So
that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, very worthwhile experience.
Do you have any like highlights from the weekend, Christopher, that you'd like to tell us about?
Highlights from the weekend. Going to the con with my youngest daughter.
Kira is
Kira,
so
she's excited. Awesome. She was wearing her Wonder Woman shirt. we walked around the arch. We looked at one of my favorite pastime at cons, as I've said in the past, is to go into Artist Alley and talk to the independent artists and look at their art and maybe buy a few pieces for myself or for the children or otherwise, because I love that stuff. I love the artists doing their thing. And Kira loved it too. And we walked up and down the artist aisles and we found this artist that had this piece of art that was fantastic, which I got for Kristen. And then Kira, she's very much into Harry Potter these days, and there was an artist who was doing a take on Harry Potter and Snape especially. Kira loves Snape and the sacrifice and the love and all the emotion around Snape. And so there was a picture, a sort of a print of a Snape character with why am I blanking on this term now? The Doe, the
Patronus,
yes, the Patronus of the Doe, and it's the phrase "always" was on there, and very evocative of Snape's sacrifice, and Kira loved it, and so I got that for her. As well.
Oh, wow,
so
that's awesome!
That was the highlight. Was going to that with her and walking up and down the aisles and seeing all the costumes, and she had a ball and I had a ball.
Seeing a blossoming geek in training.
Yep.
You know.
We have a good
How
time.
Much longer can she be considered a sidekick? Because she had a sidekick badge. Is that up to 12?
12, I think. So a couple
I think
more.
I think that's really a fun feature of the Phoenix Comic Con is the fact that all the 12
they
and under, you can get a sidekick,
for the
badge.
Sidekick badge.
Oh, they charge now?
This year is the first year they charge for the sidekick.
All right, well, that's a little bit of a drawback.
Yes.
It's still, you know, it's probably still discounted, you know. But...
Oh, it's hugely discounted. It was $5.
Jeez, okay.
Yeah, no, Saturday pass alone was $40 this year.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, I did a carry this year with Megan Merrill. She's a friend of mine, and she'd never been to a con before. And I did a con carry, took her down on Saturday. She loved it. She took pictures with cosplayers and took some pictures with the prop cars that were outside the convention center.
What level of geek is Megan Merrill?
I would probably put her at a strong 2, maybe a 3 with certain things.
Strong 2.
Strong 2. She's a solid 2 with certain things.
You can work with that.
Absolutely.
That provides excellent foundation.
Mm-hmm. It really does. I will, before we move on to Scene Red and Plate, I will
having
give
an
it
interest
stuff.
In having an interest to go into a con gets almost to the 2 already. So.
Well, I feel like cons in the past, like, 10 years have really taken off because of, like, the popularity with cosplays.
You're right.
There's been so many. Like, I remember going to Phoenix Comic Con, and I probably said this before, when it was, like, in Mesa, and it was.
Oh, yeah.
A couple hundred people went. And over the past 10 years, with all the comic book shows, all the comic book movies being super popular, all the video games, you know, becoming super popular, and cosplaying becoming like a thing, I feel like cons have really, really blown up and become a huge moneymaker.
It's less of a geeky commitment.
Right.
It's less of a niche.
It's much
thing.
More of a... Yeah, it's more of a, hey, let's go check out the freaks kind of thing.
Oh, there's there's a little bit of that, but that's also
still that aspect of it for me. And I've been to 15 conventions or whatever, and I still love to go watch and see the people. That's still such a fun
part. But it's not
for
me. I'm talking about it's from a place of negativity.
I don't think it needs
you're
to go there, Christopher.
From a place of positivity.
I don't think it needs to go there at all. I think there's just so much more Like the level you need to be to for an acceptable con run is lower than it was, Christopher.
Yeah,
that's all
no,
I'm
you're
saying.
Right.
Like
you're right.
3 or 4 used to be like what you need to be to admit going to a Comic-Con, you know? But now mm-hmm. it's like, oh, it's no big
right.
deal. It's no big
100%
deal.
100% right.
Yeah. So that's cool. I'm glad you guys
oh, yeah.
went
Before
to that.
Before we move
fun.
On, I want to give a shout out. I have one other kind of story to tell.
Yeah.
I have a streaming team that I follow on Twitch. They're
yeah.
the Dames Playing Games.
Yes.
They're a local stream team. They broadcast out of Phoenix, and I have been I guess kind of active on their stream for the past few months. They play the reason I found out about them actually is because they play Destiny. They're in a directory yeah. that I frequent.
Shocking, dude. Shocking.
I know, right? They play Destiny. They also play. They played Smite on occasion. They played Overwatch. They played the beta of Overwatch.
Are they playing
Uncharted.
Streaming Overwatch now?
I don't think they're streaming Overwatch right now. I think. Huh. They tend to rotate their games.
Do they play on 360 or...?
They play on the Xbox One.
Oh, okay,
that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. So I met up with... But the point of the story is that I had become friendly with the Dames in the show, and I actually met up with them on Thursday night, and we hung out. And, you know, we have become kind of chummy. And,
how many Dames are there? This is a...
Let's see. There's well, the one I met Selfish Pony. I met Smiley Aria. I met Miss BB, and I met Kate Pray Love.
Do they all play together, or do they?
They play two. They play two Dames at a time. Selfish Pony is always on the show, and she's always like the host. And then there's one other Dame that rotates in and out with her because they always one will play the game, and one will interact with chat and read chat. So they make it very community oriented on their channels.
Ah, that's good. That's
yeah.
smart.
No, it was. They put on actually a pretty good show.
Well, since we're friends with them now, if they're listening to this episode, they are welcome to be guests on here if they'd
yeah,
like
they
to.
Yeah, they ought to have them on as a guest.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, no. I met those
brothers
four.
Is a loose term, you know.
Well, we have legendary we've had legendary listeners on the on
that's
this
right. That's right.
podcast before. So
Kristen and Sean and who else is legendary?
No other legendary.
That's pretty much it. If you feel like
appeared.
You're a legendary,
yeah.
If you feel like you're a legendary listener and you ever want to be on the show, you should email us at brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com. Boom.
I would, and also
nice plug. That was perfect.
You
what
like
did
that?
Way to,
you like
way
that?
To be a host. Dude.
I know. I'm killing
bro.
It right now. 55 coming out.
That almost rises to the level of 55.
Almost.
Oh, I will say also rapidly approaching. Legendary listener status. Chris Scott was at Comic-Con as well.
I met
up with him on Sunday with his girlfriend Sarah, and they were at the con. So,
Chris Scott's definitely legendary.
Them.
He could
yeah,
be on the
sure.
show too, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
Yeah, man, it was a good time. It was
did
nice
you go
to
any,
meet those
Andrew,
ladies.
Did you go do any panels other than the Masquerade?
I went to the Dames Playing Games panel. They had a panel on
did.
Sunday
they
where they went
own,
over
they talk
kind
about.
Of base. They talked the basics, basically, of Twitch streaming.
Huh.
They talked about their setup, how they
That's
run
useful.
That show. It was very useful. It was very informative, honestly. There was three Dames on the panel, and kind of they run the stream a little bit differently than other streamers I know about because they actually have kind of a background producer who kind of runs the show while the Dames play so they can focus on gameplay and interacting with chat. That person spoke as well. It was very informative. The panel was actually really, really good. Then they had their first panel. They've only been streaming about 6 months or so, and they had probably 30 or 40 people in the room. So it was a very well attended panel for them. So it was nice to see. So Dames Playing Games.
They're
going to
blow
Switch.
Up now since we've pumped them up.
Yep.
That's right.
Let's,
that's right.
They can attribute their success to us. They've only got 2,500 followers on Twitch right now. Or
oh, that's
something
pretty
like that.
Good. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, it is. They have a pretty decent amount of followers right now. So,
I mean, I wonder what the numbers are for you to be a Twitch. Well, we follow them on Twitter. The Brothers
yeah.
Geek do. So, I wonder what the numbers need to be at for you to be just a solely Twitch player to make your money. Like,
Well, you have to.
Do they talk about that on the panel? What's the financial sort of?
They have to be. You have to be partnered to make money on Twitch. Anyone who has a Twitch account can stream.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to essentially apply for partnership, and there's certain criteria that need to be met.
Mm-hmm.
You have to stream at least 3 days a week. You have to average a certain number of streamers or of viewers every single stream. And so there's certain, and it's a lot of it is kind of amorphous because you can get rejected from partnership and then reapply.
Mm.
So they at this point do not average enough.
Did you apply, Andrew?
For Twitch partnership?
Yeah.
I've never streamed before, dude.
You can admit to that. And then you got rejected because you had two followers?
I have zero followers. That's exactly right. I have been rejected at more than one thing in my life. Twitch partnership is just the next most recent one.
Wow.
You can admit, this is a safe place, dude.
It is a safe place.
Anyways.
Feel very
that joke
safe
was
here.
Almost as good as my jokes in 55.
Almost.
Nothing
comes to 55. Nope. All right. Well, that's cool. So big shout out to Dames Playing Games, right?
Yep.
And Phoenix Comic Con.
And Phoenix Comic Con. Awesome. Great event.
I have to give them mad props for they have really solved, as well as can be done with the configuration of the convention center, they have solved the bottleneck problem.
Mm. Oh, yeah. They've, you talked about that last year.
They've done a very good job of
flow of
human beings, and it's much easier to get around, far less bottlenecky.
Yes.
Much better flow of human beings.
100%
so
agree.
So I wholeheartedly approve and applaud them for those efforts because it was much better this year.
Cool.
100% agree.
All right. Let's move on to some scene.
Let's do that.
Yes.
So I usually like give this up to you guys right out of the gate, but I have to say, if you haven't watched the latest Game of Thrones episode,
you should
because some crazy crap happened. Like,
yes, you, yes,
holy
it does.
Crap, crazy stuff reveals.
Not
and
not that crazy,
dude. People still alive, people getting stabbed. Like,
yep, well, there's always there stabbings. Is.
I mean,
that
there was definitely a stabbing.
There was some
stabbiness,
dude. That was so hardcore. I was like, oh my god,
yeah, but I. It wasn't that hardcore because if you're a true assassin, you slit her throat and she's done.
No, no. The hardcore part is the afterwards when she's walking down the street bleeding and no one's helping her.
True.
That made me really uncomfortable because it was just like nobody's coming to her aid at all, and she's just bleeding in the street.
Dying.
Yeah.
Yep.
Holy crap.
Yeah, that was intense.
That was super intense. So, I think Arya is going to have to, like, turn on them and go after them. I'm really
curious about that storyline as to where that's headed because I don't want her whole time in the temple to be a waste of time.
Right.
I want her to become this supreme assassin.
Well, she's already,
But if it's at the cost of her individuality, then I understand that break,
mm-hmm.
but it bums me out that she can't go all the way. It's just I'm troubled by the time spent on the buildup of her participation in this temple and where it's headed for her. I'm worried about that, the payoff for her. So
I agree with you on that point as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to honestly say I think because, I mean, you guys have talked about that particular storyline and how she's – where it's moving with her, the person that was revealed to be alive in this past episode.
Yeah.
And the interactions that that person has with the Holy Man, mm-hmm. whom I don't even think we get a name from the Holy Man. The Holy Man is played by one of our favorite actors, Ian McShane. He was on Deadwood, which is one of my all-time favorite shows.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful character, and he has great interactions with this character who turns out to be alive.
Yep.
And leads to some tragedy, obviously. But I thought that was
always
such
tragedy.
There's always tragedy, but that was it's not necessarily a bottle episode, but that kind of self-contained little plot where we find out where this character is.
It was a cold open, dude.
Exactly. Who does it? Game of Thrones never does cold opens.
Cold open. Yeah, it was a cold.
They did a cold open. The first cold open they ever did was at the beginning of season 3. The beginning of season 4, after the Red Wedding, there's a scene where they're melting down ice into two different swords, and it's Tywin Lannister kind of celebrating the victory over the Starks, you know, because they all are the war ends essentially at the Red Wedding. That's the first cold open I think the show ever did, and now they did a new one this past episode, revealing that this long thought dead character is actually alive.
There's a lot of internet speculation that he's still alive, so it's that stunning.
Well, I mean, yeah, he just was left. We're trying. Mm-hmm. We're not saying his name, but we are revealing a lot of stuff. So if you're you haven't watched this, we're sorry.
If you're a big fan, you've pieced this together already. So.
Right. Right. Exactly. It's sort of just like he's left to die. So I feel like unless you see somebody like get their head cut off or throat slit, they're dead. Like, but if they're left to die, who knows?
This is a fact.
They're definitely going to come back. We saw him not really get killed. I thought he was going to be smoked. And in the books, like, they talk about the Hound being part of the Brotherhood Without Banners. But it could just be a guy masquerading as the Hound, because you never actually see him in the book. Like, he's not, like, definitely...
They speculate it could just be a man in his armor.
Right.
Because he had very distinctive armor.
Yeah, he had very distinctive armor, so that's why people were recognizing him. Plus, in this big old world, like, nobody knows what anybody looks like until, you know...
All they hear is the stories.
Right. Yeah. And which is really interesting because one of my favorite scenes in the episode was Jaime Lannister ends up at River Run and has a conversation with the Blackfish outside. Like,
yeah,
that conversation was so epic, dude.
Yeah.
Good.
And
there are so many little nice bits where they're interacting characters who have never interacted before.
The dialogue was awesome. Yeah.
The dialogue was so good. And that scene was so tense. And you're just like, oh my god, they're just trying to get him to give up and like save a bunch of lives, and like this guy doesn't give up. It's crazy.
The Blackfish does not give up.
This is what I started to realize.
A lot of people are gonna die.
Everybody who's old in this world is like a badass. Like
you don't get to be old unless
right.
you can survive.
Exactly.
That shit.
Right. That's what
I was
I'm saying.
Say you don't live to be an old person.
You don't live right
in that world.
That's why the Martell's grandmother is still alive. She's a badass and smarter than everybody. And she knows when to cut and run.
That exchange with Cersei, I think, was my top five moment of the whole show for me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Her calling out Cersei and just saying to her what everyone has wanted to say.
For years.
For years was just fantastic.
Yeah. It was fantastic.
I love that scene so much.
Yeah, the most recent episode was great, if you can't tell by how we're talking about it. So if you haven't watched it yet, you definitely should.
It had definitely great moments. So.
For sure. Yeah, so we should move on to other scene, because, I mean, that was pretty epic. But Chris and Andrew, Chris, what would you like to talk about for scene?
I want to talk about Penny Dreadful.
Okay.
I am current on Penny Dreadful.
So am I.
I am a couple behind, so be careful.
This season has been interesting.
Yes.
I watched
the most recent episode earlier today.
Lot of dancing around and not a whole lot of payoff so far. But they are building to, I think, some incredible episodes down the line. But I've enjoyed – it's heartbreaking, the story of Frankenstein's monster and him finding his family.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole storyline is freaking heartbreaking as a father watching that. They've done such a good job.
They really have.
Dealing with the emotions of all of that and the torment of Frankenstein's monster is amazing.
Well, I rewatched the last episode I watched was like the bottle episode of what's her name in the
Vanessa
insane, Vanessa Ives in the insane asylum.
Incredible yeah. episode.
With Frankenstein's, sorry if we're spoiling it for you, Frankenstein's monster is her orderly.
Yeah, somehow before his death.
Before in the insane asylum.
Right,
yeah.
In the, like way, so she's like reliving her experience in this insane asylum, and it's so messed up and interesting.
Through hypnosis.
Such a great episode.
It really is.
I was worried that she was going to kill him. And
that's how he ended up with Frankenstein.
Right.
Dr.
Yeah.
Frankenstein.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
I could see that. Yeah.
But it didn't happen, fortunately. And,
yeah. No. I was glad about that.
Right. That would have totally like jacked her up. That like she killed him and robbed him of his family. And
we've probably talked about this before, but it bears repeating. Ava Green as Vanessa Ives. All the things that she does on the show, she is almost beyond compare in terms of.
I don't know how, as an actor, you could maintain your humanity being in this show.
Mm-hmm. But think about
the trauma she has to deal with.
Well, the trauma that she deals with
episode after episode, and the emotional like place she has to put herself in to do the job she does on this show.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't imagine.
And you believe everything.
So
you believe everything she's going through.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah, well, she looks like she's like actually going through like some kind of emotional turmoil. Like you totally buy it the whole time.
The perfect example of the other end of the spectrum, and it happened in the most recent episode. She has that interaction with Mr. Lyle, who she hasn't seen in a couple of episodes. She goes to him for some help.
Yes.
There's some things happening in his life, and there's this moment of just extraordinary affection and tenderness between the two of them.
It's amazing.
And she goes through all these deeply, deeply traumatizing things, and she's capable of so much dark expression and so much violence. Yeah. And then she has this incredibly tender moment with this man that she's come to rely on so much, and all of it feels real. There's so much humanity and all of the amazing kind of grotesque, monstrous stuff.
Performances are incredible.
It's just incredible. Just incredible. Yeah. You're missing out if you're not watching
this show. I mean, this show is so fantastic, and it's so crazy that more people aren't talking about it. I feel like it's one of the best written shows, best written and best acted, and it's so subtle, and like, it's so character driven.
Yeah, and everyone is at the top of their
right.
I mean, we barely talk about Josh Hartnett and what he does on the show. He's freaking great.
He's so good.
He should get nominated for Best Supporting Actor for every single season on this show.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
He's so good.
Yeah,
so
just amazing.
So
the show.
Yeah, what the hell's going on with his storyline? Because damn.
Yeah, damn.
Right. Don't tell me anything. The last time I saw him, he was with that witch. Yeah, I bet it does.
Shit comes to a
head. Andrew, do you have something for scene?
I do. I've been chiming in on everybody else's.
Yeah,
but I
actually
went and saw Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows.
So I've heard this is terrible. Is that accurate?
It is so stupid.
Yeah, great.
But things can be fun that are stupid.
Stupid is not terrible, though.
Stupid is not terrible.
Right.
No, like that.
I think I enjoyed the first one a little more.
Sure.
It kind of has a little more ridiculous fun about it and just kind of unhinged fun. They try to achieve more of a story with more of a mystery in this one, and it might actually bring down the fun a little bit because
interesting. Okay.
It's more focused than the first movie, maybe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, coming from only watching the first one and kind of having mixed feelings about it, the first one where it shines was the turtles interacting with each other and like being brothers and giving each other crap and like working together and like they each have like badass moments throughout the movie, but they're also like funny and making fun of each other and like they're young, they're teenagers.
There's definitely that in this movie,
okay.
but
right.
I felt that the first movie was more fun for me than
so
this one.
Bebop and Rocksteady and Krang are all in this.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And Luke...
Casey Jones.
How was
Stephen Amell?
Stephen Amell is good. He does his best with playing Casey Jones, and he's... He's funny
he
and
does
he's
his
a tough
best.
Guy.
What is that even?
Faint praise, dude.
Wow, that. Wow, don't sugarcoat it or anything, Andrew.
Well, sometimes you're limited by the material that you have.
That joke was almost as good as the one you told in 55.
Yeah, almost.
Almost. Okay.
I mean, I don't regret seeing it. I don't feel like I wasted the $7.50 because I saw it on a matinee. I mean, that's kind of my barometer is whether or not I feel like I wasted my money, and I don't feel like I wasted my money. So, I didn't waste my time or my money.
Sorry to interrupt. I was going to say that, I don't think we've all seen X-Men.
I have seen X-Men. Maybe we'll wait till Andrew sees X-Men and then we'll
X-Men
talk about
last night, but we need to talk.
I'll see it in the next, before we record the next episode, I'll absolutely see it. I'm going to see it in the next 7 days. For
yeah.
Sure.
We'll talk about X-Men next time. If you're curious about that, we'll just remind each other to.
Yeah, I know. I'm seeing it in the next 7 days. So we'll absolutely talk about it the next time.
You absolutely need to, Andrew, because there's so much from because I remember watching the cartoon X-Men with you so much, and I feel like that's something that you and I shared.
Oh, for sure.
Because we were like the right age for that.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of that stuff that's in this movie, so you need to check that out, and then we'll discuss. Let's move on to some red.
Cool.
Andrew, why don't you give us some red?
I am. I have made a concerted effort to work on the stacks and stacks of comics that I have next to my bed.
Yes.
I have been reading. I kind of jumped around a little bit. The Justice League, written by Jeff Johns. There is a long series called The Dark Side War. It started in issue 40 and resolves in issue 40 or 51 or 52. I'm about halfway through that so far. It's been pretty damn good. And it kind of leads up to DC Rebirth, which is this kind of the thing that's going on right now in the DC universe. So I have been reading that, and so my comics, I'm gradually working through the stack of comics that I have.
Awesome.
I will say also I have been reading it's called A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Oh yeah.
George R. Martin has written it's a compilation essentially of three novellas of that tells the tale of two characters he created. The storyline exists 100 years before Robert's Rebellion, so 100 years before the events of Game of Thrones.
So Targaryens are ruling the
Targaryens
Seven
are ruling. They're a huge family with princes and princesses and. They're flourishing. There's no dragons anymore. The dragons have all died off, but they securely rule the Seven Kingdoms. It tells the story of a landless knight, basically called a hedge knight,
mm-hmm.
who he wanders the countryside, and he's essentially a paid soldier, but he holds himself above being a sellsword because he has a sense of honor, and you have to be knighted by a previous knight to call yourself sir. And you can be granted lands eventually by the lord that you serve. So it's telling the story of that hedge knight and his squire.
Here's something that we've never talked about is a couple episodes ago of Game of Thrones, we saw like a flashback of Sir Arthur Dayne.
Yeah.
Dude,
the Sword of the Morning.
Because like he's in the book like crazy. Everybody mentions Sir Arthur Dayne and how he was like the best.
And he was the best swordsman of the age.
Yeah, and just wrecked.
Yeah.
And then we finally get to see him in the show just like
smoke fools.
He's standing in front of four like trained fighters and
yeah,
he kills like all of them but one. Like that's insane to me.
Yeah,
like
it's the best sword fight in the history of the show.
Yeah, I think it's one of the best sword fights I've ever
seen
in the show, for sure.
Yeah, so much fun.
Sorry to interrupt, Andrew.
The novellas, the so far I'm in the second novella. They're kind of self-contained stories.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, so far the second one has been pretty good. The first one was legitimately great. It kind of introduces all the characters and how he becomes a hedge knight and how he kind of his initial challenges to kind of establish himself as a man of honor. His honor gets
is,
down.
I mean, is this person like from a house or are they like no, they're just like a man that's worked his way up fighting?
Essentially worked his way up, yes.
So he's like, he's like Braun. Like he's like that kind of.
The 5-second backstory in this guy is that he was a penniless kind of street urchin who gets basically adopted by a hedge knight to be his squire, and he trains him, and they develop a father-son relationship, obviously, and the first novella begins with this knight dying and the main character inheriting his worldly possessions, which is basically a suit of armor, a pair of horses, and kind of odds and ends associated with being a traveling knight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds cool.
It's very cool, actually. I'm really enjoying the stories, and the characters are great.
Mm-hmm.
George R. R. Martin can write a good story, man. So I am.
Why is he writing this instead of finishing Winds of Winter?
It's just a compilation of the three stories.
God damn it.
I'm with you, dude. Focusing. It's scratching that itch that I need. Okay. I need to scratch. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Christopher, what do you have for Red?
I will highlight a book I'm reading that is a science fiction book called The Three Body Problem.
Yep.
It is a Chinese science fiction book translated from the Chinese, written by a Chinese author. Really, really interesting story. Told from the perspective of from China, scientists in China, Chinese culture. Translator has done a great job of providing notes in terms of cultural references that a Western reader might not get or might not know from
Chinese
history. That'd
be an interesting disconnect if you didn't have that information to go on.
Yeah, no, it's not that heavily done, but just enough to provide insight as to why that reference is significant. Like, you know, in the context of the reference, explaining, okay, this is a reference about this thing, which is the readers would understand, and this is why the author would put that in that spot. It's really good, and it's a really fascinating science fiction tale, and I'm enjoying it a lot. I highly recommend you reading it.
Well,
The Three Body Problem.
I've been working on The Inferno.
I'm not done.
Oh, sorry. No.
Whoa,
I'm not doing. I'm not doing mine. I was just saying.
Yeah.
I'm almost finished with Inferno, and I was considering what book I'm going to get next, and I was going to ask you guys of whether I should get the Three Body Problem, or what I was going to do before you got that book was get the third book in the Expanse series. Right, okay.
You got to finish the Expanse
series is actually very good.
So I've been, like, spreading them out. Like, I always want to come back to the Expanse series, and I want to come back to the Harry Dresden series. And I always like to ask you guys which one.
You should finish both of those before you do anything else.
Right. Those two. I think those are going to be my go to for a while.
The third book in the Expanse series is what? Abaddon's Gate.
Is that what it is? Okay.
It's a very good book. It's very tense. Lots of action in that one. It's very good.
I can't wait until the Expanse comes back, dude. That show is so. Awesome.
I follow both. I follow both the writers, and I follow they are introducing my favorite character from the series, Bobby Draper, in season two, and they cast her.
Are they
perfect cast?
So,
by the way,
we're still in the middle of book one.
And I think they're going to introduce her earlier.
Correct.
Well, just like Arvasarala, she's in the second book, so was Bobby Draper, but they're introducing both those characters into a book they're not in, but that's okay because those characters are freaking great.
They're great.
So
they only allow for larger perspectives on the universe.
Right, and she's a Martian like
reconnaissance marine soldier.
Dude,
she's
I
awesome.
Can't wait to see like the Martian battle armor that she's gonna rock because she's a battle armor like driver. And
yeah,
so cool. I can't wait to see how what it looks like. Yeah. Oh my
god! Still got 6 months. They're still shooting and. They do it like game they do Expanse like Game of Thrones. They shoot the entire season and then they edit and then it airs after all the episodes.
Sorry to interrupt, Christopher. Finish your read.
The only thing that I'll bring up is I'm listening to the game book one of the Patrick Rothfuss series called The Name of the Wind.
Okay.
It is a fantasy series. I think that it's a trilogy. Only two books have been written. First book, let me make sure I have that title exactly right.
Yeah.
Yes, The Name of the Wind. Patrick Rothfuss is the author. It is absolutely fantastic book. It is honestly, it's fantastic. For our book club, Rothfuss wrote a book called, or actually a novella called The Slow Regard of Silent Things, which is set in the world of The Name of the Wind. And so I read The Slow Regard of Silent Things, which out of context is kind of difficult. And so that prompted me to start at the beginning, which was the first book, The Name of the Wind, and I am thoroughly enjoying it.
It's high fantasy is what it is?
High fantasy, it's not Lord of the Rings kind of fantasy. It is, it's much more fantasy. The character, the main character is, too much. I don't want to give away too much the main character's fantastic.
All right, give us the name of the book and the author one more time.
The Name of the Wind.
Okay.
Patrick Rothfuss.
Okay.
Is the author is fantastic.
What does that term mean, Andrew? High fantasy. I always curious about that.
Well, I think it encapsulates
swords and sorcery,
creature elves.
What's the contrast of that? What's a fantasy book that, like, is Dresden? Because Dresden,
that's urban fantasy,
right?
That's
it takes place in our world. Just adds a little something. Like Harry Potter takes place in this world, but it adds
I would probably call. If you really wanted to get specific about it, besides the fact that it's a children's book, I would probably call Harry Potter urban fantasy just because it takes place on Earth.
It's on Earth. That's what I'm saying. Like ours. Like Lord of the Rings takes place on Middle Earth, not Earth. Doesn't adhere to the same kind of – there's different physics. It's different – laws that govern the world. Just
like the world. Something that's not high fantasy is – like The Name of the Wind and other tales that are set in a sort of fantasy genre setting, but are grittier, but are like more grounded, down to earth, less magic.
Yeah.
Those are wouldn't necessarily be considered high, in my view, wouldn't necessarily be considered high fantasy. High fantasy has those typical elements.
Yeah.
A lot of magic, a lot of elves, a lot of
good versus
fantastical.
Evil.
Yes, a lot of that.
Yeah.
The Name of the Wind, I have to say, the structure of The Name of the Wind is fascinating and really a clever idea.
Okay.
The structure of The Name of the Wind is the hero of the tale telling his life story to another character called the Chronicler, and the hero of the tale is now an innkeeper in this small town in the middle of Shitburg.
Wow.
I've been to Shitburg. It's terrible.
But the hero is this, like, he has, like, multiple...
Is Shitburg shitty? Is that a way to describe
just
it?
Just tiny. But the hero of the tale has, all of these titles, like, you would expect for this epic hero. He's known as all, the Bloodless and the Arcane and the King Killer. He has all of these titles,
right?
That is like in the wind in terms of people have heard the tale,
but no one knows who he is or what he looks like.
No one knows who he is, and the chronicler shows up and knows that he's the guy, and then convinces him to tell his story. And so he sits down, and the structure of the book is in the one timeline, I'm telling you my tale. And then the other timeline is he starts when he's a kid.
Oh, wow.
And it's really well done. That's cool. I am loving it so far. So
that sounds great. Why do you pick all these really great books, Christopher, that I want to read?
Where did There's you hear? So you heard about this through your book club, Christopher, this particular
book
author?
Club. Cool. Book club, one of the members
the very
of the
best,
book club.
Maybe the only good reason I've ever heard to join a book club is this particular, I don't know, I always heard book clubs are kind of lame.
No,
it's not lame.
It's how the people
lots of interesting stuff that I never would have read.
So yeah, it's all about like who's in the club with you and what they choose to read,
right.
Andrew.
This is true.
That's what it's all about.
And having good discussion and fellowship about reading.
Sure. Sure.
Absolutely.
And so yeah,
I'd join your book club if you invited me.
No, Andy suggested it. It was his turn, and Andy suggested the novella that's set in this world, and that has led me to read. I will read book one, listen to book one, and I will listen to book two, and I can't wait for book three. So.
Cool, awesome. Cool,
very cool. Patrick Rothfuss.
All right, let's move on to some played. Christopher, what have you been playing?
I have been playing Destiny and Overwatch.
Nice.
Yes.
And do you have?
I feel like both of you have fallen down the Overwatch rabbit hole.
Once I figured out my control issues with Overwatch, dude, that game is hella fun.
Yeah,
I'm
so Blizzard much fun. We've said this before. Proficient. Blizzard makes great games.
That they do.
I wish I was better. You know, my 46-year-old brain is not a fast twitch brain really anymore, and so but the characters are fun.
You're in your prime.
The characters are fun, the gameplay is fun.
What's your character? Who do you play?
Say, what's your go-to?
Pharah is my go-to.
Pharah. So, okay. Yes. All right. That's
fun. I like Pharah. But I'm, you know, I haven't tried all of them. I'm working my way through them, but I, you know, I had my issues with the controls, and once I figured out how to swap the sticks and my controls, I can actually control it without having to think. And now I can really enjoy the game, and that's what I've been.
Here's something, Christopher. The weekly brawl this week is Mystery Heroes. So every time you die, you respawn as a random character.
Ooh, I need to do that.
I did that during the beta, and I recommend it because it forces you to try out characters you would never try.
I love it.
And then you gotta like try your best to survive with this character that you've never played before, and like see what it's like and try it out.
You have to play the role. You have to play the role
exactly.
of that character, right?
Right, it's like, right.
It forces you to think differently because all the characters have their roles on a team.
That's
so,
what I love about this game.
What kind of role does Pharah normally play in the matches?
She is an offensive.
She's like an attacker, but she's also like a group disruptor because she goes up high and then bombs down on people.
Yes.
So she has ranged attacks or she melee?
She's
ranged.
She's very much ranged. But she doesn't do a lot of like single target damage.
She does AoE stuff.
She shoots
rocket propelled grenade kind of thing.
Right. Okay. Right. They're,
Patrick, you play this game as well. What do you play?
When we're attacking, I play Zenyatta, who is like a mixture of healing and damage, which I think works really well with my playstyle. And when I'm defending, I play Tjordbjørn, who builds turrets.
He's like this little troll guy who's a mech.
Right.
Dwarf guy.
He's a little dwarf, right, who builds turrets, and he's
That's funny, I'm going to interrupt you. There was, how do you pronounce his name one more time?
Tjordbjørn.
There was a Tjordbjørn costume at the Masquerade.
Oh my god, I was wondering if there was going to be any Overwatch stuff.
There was one.
Overwatch cosplay.
This All these characters
big, like,
have
Pekka Claw and like the big headpiece.
Oh my god, that's awesome!
Yeah.
Well, because
the
characters
the
are so different.
The cosplay that's going to come out of this game will be epic.
That's what I'm saying. Is like they yep. all are crazy costumes.
Well, they all have super distinctive looks, right?
Yeah,
I've watched
yeah.
enough on yep. Twitch. They all have really cool distinctive looks.
That's the best part. Is like once you find your character, like you really start to like hone in, and you really want to like improve that character with skins and make them look how you want. I actually unlocked Zenyatta's like skin that makes him look like an Egyptian, like Ra is what the
nice.
Skin is called.
That's
so
cool.
you have like I have like a bird head, and like I have like the Egyptian.
Oh, that's awesome!
And that is pretty cool.
Yeah, it looks.
You get that from a loot crate?
No. What I got from a loot crate, I was saving up for it. It cost 1,000 space credits, Overwatch credits, and I had like about 600, and then I got a loot crate that had 500 credits in it.
Oh, nice.
And so I just, as soon as I got that, I pulled the trigger on
that's awesome.
The skin that I wanted, so now I have the skin for that character, and I'm really happy with it. It's a lot of fun.
There are so many variations in terms of skins mm-hmm. for every character that there will never be a match that will look the same.
Right.
That will be the same. Like everyone will have their own unique take on their
right.
character. Doesn't matter what character they're playing. They're all going to have unique skins, especially those people who have played a lot. And so it's the fun part of the game is that everybody's going to have their own go-to look
mm-hmm.
and character, and I love that.
Well,
and it's playable.
It's I don't know if you noticed this too, Christopher. When you have like an upgraded skin, it also
yeah.
changes how your super looks and how your attacks look. So so like Hanzo, I've seen guys who have the Hanzo with the wolf head. And
yeah.
when they shoot, Hanzo normally shoots these. His ultimate is this double dragon, like murder ball thing that he shoots at people.
Right.
Yes. But if you have,
is
the
that
wolf,
when you hear people call out anime or something like that? Is that like that? Is that his ultimate attack or something? It looks like a dragon flying through the air.
Yeah, I usually just yell "dragon, get out of the way."
Okay. Yeah, I've heard streamers yeah. yell. I've got my anime or something like that.
That's probably like what somebody else is calling another super. But anyways, when you have the wolf,
yeah.
when you have the wolf costumes, it no longer looks like two dragons. It looks like two wolves flying
seriously?
Around the air.
That's cool.
Right.
Oh,
so like as you unlock more costumes, your ultimates are going to look different, and
that's cool.
they're going to be specialized, and it's and everybody is going to have these cool, different, interesting looking ultimates.
Yeah.
And that's that like that just makes the game so much more playable because it's so much it doesn't look the same all the time. Everything is changing constantly.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Fun game.
Yeah.
Game.
Andrew.
I will comment on the fact. So at Phoenix Comic Con, there the Cobra Arcade Bar, which I've actually never been to. It's like Ground Control. It's a bar where you can go play cabinet video games. They had a lounge essentially where you could play for free cabinet games. And I actually jumped on. Do you guys? If I see the game title Gauntlet, do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah.
They had that as a free play, and I jumped on that with a couple of little punky 13-year-olds. And played on that for about 50.
Kristen told me that about the.
Oh my god!
They were giving you, dude.
The shit, and I was playing the best of the three of us, and they gave me 10 tons of shit. And I'm just like,
you were the old man. I love that.
I was the old man, and I was wrecking at this game, and they were giving me shit. Yeah, anyway, little punks, man. But I remember playing Gauntlet a lot in the arcades that we went to as kids. The arcade at Metro Center Mall that was like down where the. I remember playing arcade. It was a lot of fun. Oh my gosh, it just reminded me. And yeah, and they had for those of you who don't know what it is, you're at a third person angle above your player. It's a joystick and two buttons, and you essentially run around and you have to shoot all these mobs that are swarming you and find your way to an exit. And you can get power ups as you go through this room, and a lot there's maze. It's essentially a maze, really. where you're getting attacked the whole time. You have to stay alive and find power-ups to get through, and it gets progressive.
Oh my god, I'm looking at this game. I remember this game. Holy shit, was that fun.
You probably heard, like, the joke of this game is, like, Blue Valkyrie needs food badly.
Exactly.
Like,
yes.
That's like the announcer guy. Like
Red
Warrior needs food badly. Like, you need to pick up food to survive, and yeah, it's so funny.
It's a very fun game. So I played that for a little while when I was at the con on Saturday. It was great fun, and these two little punky 13-year-olds were. We're mouthing off the whole time, but that's just when you go to the arcade, you got to deal with punky 13-year-olds, even when you're 35, and just waiting on the masquerade to start.
Jesus, right?
But it was great fun. Yeah, I mean, I will go. I love. It reminded me how much I like playing cabinet games, so I will go down to the Cobra.
You know, last year I think Andrew they came out with a revamped version of Gauntlet for the computer.
Really?
It's supposed to be really good.
I've seen it on Steam,
and it looks pretty awesome. And people rave about it. I haven't pulled the trigger on it, but I've definitely heard that it's fun. Yeah, yeah. I pretty much talked about my gaming for this time. I played lots of Overwatch. I played a little Destiny. I've started to level my character up a little bit so that I could get to 40 with you guys and throw
them. As an aside to that, they're announcing the next DLC the day after tomorrow. We're recording this on the 7th. Bungie's doing a live stream on June 9th where they're going to preview
on
the
Twitch.
Next DLC. Yeah, they're doing it streaming it on Twitch. Called the Rock of Iron.
So, are they going to charge for this one, or did they switch? Yeah. Did they switch to the free updates? But you have to pay to win, kind of a thing.
They do. This is a DLC where it'll be. I don't think specifically that they've said there's going to be a cost on it, but I assume that there will be.
Yeah,
it's bigger than the previous two expansions, is what I've read.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So yeah. I would assume
because the Taken King is supposed to be pretty big, though, right?
Taken King's huge. Taken King is huge.
This one is supposed to be bigger than that.
Oh wow!
The speculation that I have read is that the next DLC, the Rise of Iron, will be basically the capstone to year two,
mm-hmm.
and then Destiny two will drop sometime in 2017. So Rise of Iron appears to be the last DLC that we'll get. For Destiny 1.
Well, I will say this. I've only played for a little bit, but all the connection issues and like internet problems that I had on the 360, I no longer have on the 1. So that's kind of like...
Yeah.
They're like server problems and like bugginess and disconnects, disconnects.
No, they have.
For the most part. So, yeah, I played a little of that. I did open some, I got some stuff in the mail for some reason that, was like a box of
Sterling Treasure.
Right, right.
Sterling Treasure, yeah.
I don't know.
That every Tuesday. Everybody gets a Sterling Treasure box.
Okay. Is that to try to, keep people motivated and give them the armor and stuff like that? Is that what's up?
Well, they give you armor, but it doesn't have perks and it doesn't have power on it.
You have to infuse it with higher level armor.
Yeah.
Oh.
You infuse it with higher level armor to level it up. If you like that skin, you can then use that piece of armor.
Interesting.
And level it up. Yeah.
But
that's what I was talking about with my Desolate set.
Oh.
I look like a Taken. Like, I have a complete Desolate set now. So, have you seen the Taken yet?
No.
What they look like?
Oh, I've seen the Taken. Black, yeah, they're like black and white guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
They look like they're possessed by stars, essentially.
Yeah.
My character has a complete armor set so that I look like a hunter that is a Taken.
Oh, cool.
It looks freaking awesome.
It does look really cool.
That's sweet.
It looks awesome.
Yeah, so I'm trying that out a little bit, but I'm just working my way through it slowly. But watch Twitch for their new, you know, expansion. I'm sure Andrew will be watching that. So,
well, if I can get away, it's at 10 in the morning on Thursday. Oh, okay. I work, so I'm
you
grown
might
up.
You might have to. Well, I'm sure they'll post it somewhere. So
oh no, I'll watch
re-watch
it on YouTube later. Right, they always post it later.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I might have to try it. We'll see.
I might try to figure out a way to watch it live.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah,
at least
I
part
get
of
away
it.
From my desk for a little
yeah,
while.
Yeah, on your lunch break or something. You know,
yeah, I'll take
if
an early
still
yes.
streaming.
Yes.
Andrew.
Yeah.
Do you have any trivia for us?
I do have some trivia.
Trivia!
It's not as good as the trivia from episode 55.
Nothing
I'm
is. That was the best question ever.
Right? Yeah, it was. Yeah. But wow. It is arcade themed this time
Ooh,
around.
Okay, cool.
So here you go, gentlemen.
All right.
The arcade classic Pac-Man was released in 1980.
Yes.
And the perfect Pac-Man game has long been the holy grail of arcade gamers.
Yeah.
So here is your question. Mm-hmm. And there's two bonus parts to this question.
Oh, God.
How many men, people, have a perfect Pac-Man game?
I think it's pretty low. I think it's like two or three. I feel like it's super low because it's like impossible. Because you got to get like all the power-ups and you got to get all the fruit. Like every
I think
fruit.
Three is the right number. I don't know why I'm saying that.
Okay,
think,
I'll go with two,
right.
And he'll
I'm
go
with
three, and that way one of us will
that's
be
part,
wrong.
That's part one? You said there's multiple parts?
Yeah, what's part two?
There's two bonus parts. Patrick kind of touched on it. What is considered the perfect game? There's more parts to what Patrick is talking about, but that's a bonus part to it. What is considered a perfect Pac-Man game?
I just listened to Ready Player One.
I know, and
that's why I'm bringing this up.
Oh,
right?
My God.
They talked about this in Ready Player One
directly.
For sure.
And
it's like 250 levels or some shit like that. And there's
is it 256? It's 256 because it's like the same as like RAM, like.
That would definitely make sense, but I don't remember that.
Okay.
It's in the 250 range. Yeah. Something like
the
that.
Second part of the bonus is what's the fastest perfect game that's ever been run?
Oh, wow.
Oh, God. In terms of time?
Yeah.
I bet it's like 10 hours or something. It's like ridiculous, isn't it? Like
fastest. Like 12 hours. I'll say 12.
I'm going to say 10. I'm going to say 10 hours with two people are my guesses.
You guys are kind of in the ballpark with all this, but there's kind of. According to Wikipedia, there have been seven people that have achieved a Pac-Man perfect game.
Wow, that's more than I thought.
And the first one was achieved in 2013. Mm. The fastest one was achieved in 2013. A perfect game in Pac-Man, you get every single pellet, you get every single power-up, you eat every single enemy, you get every single piece of fruit, and you do it in one life.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's
the
insane.
The most possible points achieved, 3,330,360 points.
Wow.
And it's 255 levels.
Oh, wow.
The mythical 256th level is actually a glitch level. You can't actually play it. You achieve it, and if you can.
In Ready Player One, see something about there's a like you kill the game at the end.
Essentially, yes. If you get to the 256th level, there's a glitch that occurs, and you basically brick the game.
That's right.
Yeah,
it fully resets because it doesn't have enough memory or some shit like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The randomizer can't randomize it or whatever beyond the 255th level.
That's so interesting. Oh my gosh.
And the world record set. For the fastest perfect Pac-Man game, 3 hours, 28 minutes.
Wow.
Seconds.
That guy's playing hardcore.
Yeah.
My God.
One life. The
concentration involved in doing that.
Seriously.
I mean, as a kid, I bought the books that had all the patterns.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. So
I was never committed enough to commit all that shit to memory.
Yeah.
I just refused to do that because it was an epic waste of time.
Yeah.
But there were books. It appeals to your nature
as a gamer.
Yes.
Your
books that had every pattern.
Yeah. Crazy.
That's so intense.
It is intense.
Excellent. If you'd like to help Andrew with his trivia, you can email him at kinginthenorth52@gmail.com. If you'd like to email the show about questions and comments, you should email us at brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com. You should follow us on Twitter at brothers_geek@twitter.com. And, of course, visit the website brothersgeek.com.
Yes.
Thank you, brothers.
Thank you.
Quite as good as 55, but you know, a damn good episode.
Excellent.
Han would be pleased.
Yes, he would.
Oh,
because when he smoked Greedo in the face after he shot first, he was almost as pleased as when we were at the end of episode 55.
True.
Excellent.
Excellent.
All right.
That was awesome. Very well. What is this?